Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in. On the other side of the intro, we're going to be speaking to Liam Lawson, the Red Bull Junior driver, just to give you some kind of tips, some insight of what it takes to get on the program, to be on the program, and just anything, any kind of advice that he can give to drivers that are out there. Here we go. Ain't afraid to bear my soul, ain't afraid to walk on coals. I ain't gonna tell no lies, I ain't gonna apologize. Can't stop. Right, Liam, welcome to the Race Driver Coach Show. We're no strangers to each other because we obviously spent a long time with each other throughout the season, throughout the last three seasons. In fact, I don't think we've not seen each other for over, 2 weeks for the last 3 years, it seems like.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you. It's nice to be finally on the show.
Right. I want to, because you've got quite a good story. I want to share it with people, or you can, should I say, share it with people to show them basically how you go from being a kid who's got a big dream to kind of living it, kind of living the dream, what you go through, how you handle it, and just to get inside your mind a little bit more. Because obviously drivers that have got these big goals in racing, they don't know where to start and they just think it's not possible if they haven't got millions in the account, which it is hard, as you know, but you're a great specimen to say you are on the main stage, even though you're not in F1 just yet, you're still on the main stage, and it's a bit of a journey, and I want to share that with people. So just bring everybody up to speed from the age of, like, when did you start, and each year, what did you do, and how did you get into cars, and how did you get to today? Just tell people about yourself.
Yeah, so basically, obviously I'm from New Zealand, so I started racing go-kart club level in New Zealand when I was 7 years old. The first couple of years was more for fun. I mean, I took it very seriously, but in terms of how much money we were putting into it, we never had that much, but we weren't really, my dad wasn't putting too much into it at that stage. And then it started to get more competitive, and I started racing on more of a national level and going up the classes, and then always had the dream of Formula One and racing in Europe and stuff like that. So that was always a goal. I really never thought too much about it, when to step out of karting or anything like that. It was actually my dad that sort of made the step for me and entered me into a scholarship program for a Formula First or Formula V car. So I did the scholarship, and then basically I was lucky enough to win the scholarship and then do a season. It was a full funded season in Formula First. So we did that year, and I was lucky enough to meet a person that basically started to go out and find money for me, find sponsorships, stuff like that, so I could focus on the driving stuff. And he was really, really good at that, and he's still a massive, massive partner. I wouldn't be here without him. And basically,
who's that, then? Give him a mention.
Grant McDonald.
I wish I had a photo of him. I'll put it up, but I really haven't. I've been looking.
He's he was just one of the judges on the scholarship day. I met him there, and then throughout the season, things were quite difficult that year. The team was struggling for funding, and we honestly, I mean, I finished a championship like seventh or something. It was really average.
Yeah.
But Grant left the scholarship program after that season, and started to basically fully invest his time into finding money and sponsorship for me, which I'm extremely lucky of. And after that, we were able to get a car for Formula Ford in New Zealand still. So I did a season of New Zealand Formula Ford. And basically, the small group of people that were sort of sponsoring me that Grant had got just started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we started to form, more of a bigger group of people, which was quite cool.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, we wanted to go international. So we had to figure out what to do next. Obviously money was a massive issue, I guess, which was something, so we couldn't go straight to Europe or anything like that. So we decided to do Australian F4. So I did a season of that in Australia. The year after that, which was 2018, we decided to basically try and get to Europe, and that was the goal, and we decided to go for German F4. Mm-hmm. We saw it as the most competitive F4 championship in the world at that stage, so we wanted to push for that. And I was lucky enough to have enough funding. We started to form an actual company with investors. So I have a group of, I'd say, five or six people in New Zealand that actually invest into this company. And that's what basically made it possible for the European campaign the first year, and to be honest, up until now. So I was like able to do a season of German F4, and then the Toyota Racing Series. Obviously, being a home championship and stuff like that, it was a lot easier to get funding for with New Zealand businesses and stuff like this. So I was able to do this championship and win this championship, and that's what basically got me the drive with Red Bull. So we signed the contract straight after the championship, the day afterwards, and then straight to Europe. And then basically that was last season. We did FIA Formula 3 and Euro Formula. And then obviously this year with another year of FIA 3.
You've like paraphrased everything there, like summed it up in like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a bloody long journey.
Yeah,
it does sound long when you're saying it. It's like, oh my God, there's so many hoops you would have had to have jumped through, so many chance meetings with people. All these things have to come together to make it happen. It's quite a crazy ride, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's literally like the lightest overview of everything. There's so much more that's happened in the last couple of years to make all of it possible. Yeah.
And what you told me is like, literally, I was just a little kid on a lawnmower pretty much at home wanting to be an F1 driver. And you made it happen. But what would you say then caused the backers to get more and more interested in you and not all the other Kiwi drivers? Or what? Why you? What stood out? And you've got to come sort of away from yourself and see it from their angle to even answer that, I know. But what do you think your sales point is?
It's really hard for me to say as that person. To be honest, mate, you'd probably be able to answer this question better than me.
I want you to say the answer, but you won't say it. Basically, no. You're bloody fast. And what we're going to do now is show a video of one of these times. Because I basically came over to you in, what, 2018, right?
2018.
Yeah. Good job you said that, because I couldn't remember what year it was. And yeah. At Oschersleben, and I didn't really know you much at all. Didn't even know what you looked like, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
As you can remember. Yeah. And we got there, and in the first race, I saw you doing overtaking maneuvers. You've heard me say this before. Overtaking maneuvers I've just never seen at Oschersleben. Things like, oh my God, I haven't even thought about that is even possible. And you put yourself in a position where the other guy just has to make a decision. It's either crash or, okay, you've got me. And you just kept doing that and pulling it off. But then after that, TRS, you did this.
Last time out, Lawson tried the outside line, and he's looking for that again as they come to the last hairpin. And now he'll try and get drive, and he'll be side by side with Marcus Armstrong as they come to the line. This is brave racing. The Kiwis side by side as they come towards the line. Good on you. Lawson takes the line. They almost do a checkered finish, a photo finish as they cross the line. But look at this. Lawson's got the upper hand. This is going to end in tears. No, it doesn't. Lawson takes second place. That was brilliant racing, folks. If you want to know where the next Kiwi star is, you just saw it.
All right. So that was an amazing overtake and the way you set him up and everything. But just talk me through what was going through your mind when you were behind him.
In the race before, at the last corner where I went around the outside, there was in the dry an incident happened where the guy on the outside went in the wall.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that a little bit. It was Lucas Auer hit the wall there, so I was thinking about it a little bit when I was doing it. But obviously in the wet, is a little bit more grip out there. So I didn't really know, but I just kind of in the car, I didn't feel like it was that that crazy. I just went around next to him. Obviously we got quite close, and then we were sort of banging wheels all the way down into the bus stop in the turn one, where I at that point I was at the point where I couldn't back out, because if I backed out I would lose so much time. So I had to absolutely send it in and hope that he'd lift, and I knew he would lift.
He had to, mate, otherwise you both would have been upside down. And actually after that you can just see you were oversteering it all the way through. And if you watch even the lap after that and you keep watching the race, you can see the car is never straight when you're driving it. And that's what most drivers struggle with. I know you say it's easy and I'm just driving, but honestly, man, it's really difficult to drive in the wet like that, and wet and dry like that, should I say, when it's a changeable one. But as you know, I think, because it was straight after that, wasn't it? Or that weekend, sorry, that season of TRS, that you got the contracts on the table.
It was straight after that weekend, wasn't it?
Pretty much. Not that you knew, right?
No.
And it's things like that that get you spotted by the big boys. Because if I was an investor, I had all these zeros in the bank account. I would have saw that and I would have called you up straight away and just said, that's him. And that's what people are looking for. It's sort of, they see just a slight difference. And you see it in every sport. You see a Cristiano Ronaldo, just the way he controls the ball and the way he's thinking, spare capacity and all that. And you can just spot something different. And believe it or not, because I don't like inflating your egos, you know, you have got that about your driving, and that's what we must keep. And I think as it gets higher and higher up and people put more pressure and the cars are not quite like that, like you can with the TRS, you can't manhandle them like that. It's easy for you to lose your identity.
Yeah.
But I think we just keep that going, which you did actually this year, which is amazing. So sponsors, because a lot of people looking for sponsors that are watching this, especially now, can you give them an insight of how Grant did what he did and his story about what he was doing as a job as he was helping you? Because that's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, it is really amazing, to be honest. Grant used to write a magazine that was really popular in New Zealand called the Speed Sport Magazine. Obviously, nowadays, people just read up on online, and there's not so many magazines and stuff around. So that obviously had to shut down, and he worked in radio quite a lot as well. But when I met Grant, he was actually just working as a caretaker at a high school locally. So he's been in motorsport forever, but yeah, I basically just met him while he was working as a caretaker. But he has, I mean, nobody really understands, and I'm extremely lucky to have him, because I don't even understand how he's able to do it. But he just has this extremely friendly, non-threatening personality when he meets these big companies. And you can imagine some of the biggest companies in New Zealand that we have on board, that you imagine the amount of people that try and go for sponsorship and get turned down. Somehow Grant's able to walk in and just basically 90% of the time walk out with something. He's really incredible at that. So
yeah, it's good. And he was working for completely free of charge. He just fell in love with the dream, didn't he, of helping you, and he lives for that, which is really rare.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously dads do it a lot. Your dad's put so much into your career as well. We can't forget him. And your mom, everyone has, really. He was your mechanic, and he's on the phone to me nearly every lap as you're watching your racing. What's going on with the car? What's this? Which is hilarious. But yeah, we've got to get him back over to a few races as soon as he's allowed because of COVID. Because, it's like you need these people around you, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're the driver, but you need to drive your career as well, obviously. But these people are so important, and that's So, do you have to just call the sponsors and keep them up to date? Are they quite good with that?
Oh, originally, like when it was first kicking off, we sort of got into a bit of a routine with it, where Grant would go and see these companies, and he'd leave with either potentially an offer from them or something like this, and basically then I'd call them up and speak to them. And then that, we just kept doing this until we got basically as many as we could. And I still remember getting my first sponsor I got $500 a month for 12 months. It was like my first proper sponsor, and I remember being so excited and couldn't believe it. For that, I was so excited to put his name on the car in Formula Ford. that was my sponsor, you know. And then now, what it's turned into now is completely crazy. To have investors and to have a massive company structure around us is incredible.
Yeah, that is cool. You never forget your first one, do you, mate?
No,
it's always so true. Right, coming back to nowadays, just a few questions from people. I'll spot them in now and then. But one was from James, is how do you deal with the expectations of like the Red Bull program, of what they expect you to do on track? And does it screw with your head, he put?
Especially,
that's his words. What do you say to that when you've got like expectations from F1 teams?
When we first signed the deal with Red Bull, I went straight, obviously my first season with them was last year, and the start of the year was mad. Like, honestly, the pressure was huge from what I felt anyway. I was just, and it didn't even need to be, because I wasn't threatened or anything like that. I just cared so much.
So different though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I've been wanting to be a part of the Red Bull program, or even any Formula One program, for such a long time, that I couldn't really believe that we were actually on one, but I just remember thinking all the time about what the other Red Bull juniors were doing and what Dr. Marco was thinking and whether I was doing a good enough job, and all stuff that was completely out of my control and basically wasn't even worth thinking about because it doesn't help. So something that we focused on, me and you focused on a lot throughout that year, we put that focus aside and focus on things that we can control. And I think, to be honest, this year has been the this year compared to this year last year, I should have felt 10 times more pressure this year from the feedback I had from Red Bull at the start of the year, and I didn't feel any all year. It was really, really a lot better. So the pressure side, I have been able to sort of put that aside and not think about it because it just doesn't help you in any way.
Absolutely, buddy. And you, I think you have to go through it first. You can't get that right to start with. In fact, you were lucky enough, you know, because they could have easily said, oh, sorry, don't want you anymore. But actually, the second shot is like, right, now it's not so much the first time jitters. It's, I know if you reverse engineer what that means to get a result, it's just one corner at a time, one session at a time. And I've got to maximize that. And then everything else takes care of itself. Which this year, you know, you had average position of four. Finishing position of four, if you put all your race finishes together, that's quite damn high, mate. It really is. We had a DNF, so it would have been a different story if the engine didn't blow and things like that, would have won it. So, but I think performance wise you answered everything, and that was just a case of keeping it very direct. Now, when you're a kid and you're looking up to GP3, you're seeing people in GP3 and you go, oh my god, it'd be amazing to drive one of them. How does it compare to when you're actually there? Is it like, it's not as bad as I thought it was? Because I know a lot of people dream and they always want this and they never appreciate what they've got. So I just wanted to touch on that.
Literally, that was literally me, mate. As a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, I have a photo with Mitch Evans when I met Mitch Evans. And it's crazy to think, even looking back to last year, that I'm now at the same level. I've just done 2 years of it at the level that he was when he won GP3. And I remember thinking how much of an idol he was to meet him. So it's... it's not quite I don't know, it's cool being on an F1 weekend, but you do definitely get I've down the paddock, you get in Barcelona this year, for example, when we finished our races, we stop in Parc Fermé and it was like 30 something degrees. It was super humid, it was so hot. We just finished a 22 lap race and we had to walk in our full race gear because we're not allowed to take it off, like a kilometer to the way the way ourselves, because we just don't get looked after very well.
No, it is different. It's different because you're there. So it's like your base normal is that point there. So you're just bitching about things that you would have like loved one day. And honestly, it never changes, buddy. You get to F1, it's still the same. He's like,
It's so true how crazy everything became, for me anyway, how crazy things become normal. I remember when I first went to F4 in Germany, working with a European team for the first time, and I was telling you this at the time, how just I couldn't believe how professional it all was and stuff like that. I thought it was like F1 level when I was in F4, to be honest. And then getting signed with Red Bull and stuff like that is crazy, because obviously now I go to the Red Bull workshop quite often for simulator and stuff like that, and that side of things. When I first went there, I couldn't believe it, but now it's so normal. Everything becomes normal so quickly.
It does, the law of familiarity. And that's why we just get lost in the process. We just get so addicted to like winning whatever's coming up now, like FP1 or FP in our case, and making that our goal and just losing ourselves in that. Otherwise, you can start to, it can hurt you mentally, to be fair. So yeah, that's good. Right. Dylan said, it's a random one. How much for an F4 season? Do you even know how much it was for an F4 season?
I know a lot in New Zealand dollars. Typically. It would be about €300,000 probably.
Correct.
For an F4 season. The thing is with F4 is they have unlimited testing. So basically, and everything above F4, you start getting limited testing. We get like, in F3, we get 2 preseason tests that are official and you can't do anything else. So, but in F4, you can go and test as much as you like. So normally it's quite a lot of the budget into that. So you can do it for a lot less if you don't do the testing, but I don't know exactly, to be honest.
No, that's spot on, buddy. You'll be in management soon. Simon said, how'd you get picked by Red Bull? Not you, but as a driver, how'd you get picked by Red Bull? I think that's pretty obvious, but
Yeah, it's something that the year before I got, about 6 months before I got picked up by them, I remember sitting with this is when I was in F4. Mm-hmm. We had another F4 driver that was a Red Bull Junior. And I remember thinking, like, just how, you know, obviously cool it was. You always looked at the Red Bull drivers,
yeah,
and thought it was so cool. And I always was like, how the hell am I going to get, how do you get noticed? How do you get picked up? And for me, it was something that was just the timing of it when I was racing in the championship in New Zealand that was very heavily looked at because nothing else around the world was happening.
Yeah.
It was just something that, I guess, at the time, it was good timing. And yeah.
If you build the picture, it's pretty obvious because you're like second in Aussie F4, second in German F4.
Well, yeah.
So, and then you win in TRS, it's pretty obvious and they can see that you're there. So basically it's just results, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You have to show, you have to show stuff and yeah, results as well, for sure.
Simple as that. No, Ionic Beats. He asked, how do you overcome the challenges that you face in racing?
Well, for example, this year we had quite a tough Budapest run where we had two engine failures in both races. We were on for really good points. We had to go straight onto Silverstone, and I'd lost obviously 30 points, say, the week before. And I was sitting like eighth in the championship, and we basically just reset everything, focused on Silverstone, and were able to just go out and win the very next race actually and put ourselves back on the board again. So, yeah. I think this year, one of the toughest things, because we've been racing week after week after week, is, mentally, it's quite draining when you're in the car every single weekend.
Yeah.
So just having to finish a weekend, reset, get straight onto the next one and not dwell on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have much time to get over stuff. So you just could basically forget about it, move on.
Good point.
And just reset every single weekend, I think, start from scratch again. And I think that's been one of the, I guess, toughest things this year and something different to what we normally have to deal with.
Yeah, it is. You're right, mate. And it's just what, if you're focusing on it, isn't it? And if you're at home for a month and you've got to wait for like the last round, Abu Dhabi or whatever, it's easy just to sit and stew and to still have that on your mind in free practice and qualifying all that time later, but you
it
can't
actually, afford
that. TRS out that, didn't it?
Yeah.
And you've been racing pretty much now solid for 3 years with hardly any time off apart from COVID.
Yeah, well, I did. Basically, once I left Formula Ford, once I left Formula Ford, I went, because in New Zealand, our season goes from now until sort of April.
Yeah.
So I left Formula Ford. The very next month was in F4 in Australia. And then I had sort of a bit of an off season, but I went to America and did a shootout in the States. I still driving a bit over Christmas. Then I did F4. Then I did TRS, then I did two championships last year, then I did TRS again, and now I've done another championship this year. So it's been absolutely flat out, had plenty of driving, which has been good. A racing driver's dream.
And what are you doing now?
Literally, I mean, a lot of training, but just not knowing what's happening, really.
Yeah.
Basically, preparing for what, I mean, I don't know what it is, but preparing for whatever is next.
Yeah, we can't really talk about that because we don't even know. We literally don't even know.
Yeah.
Waiting for the call. Don't even know where to send you in the world right now. But yeah, you're only popping back for training, obviously, to England, and just keeping fit. But we're just training everyone. So everyone knows we're training him for a big car. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Mentally and physically. But how's the training going?
It's been really good, to be honest.
6 days a week.
Yeah, it's been since we stopped a couple of weeks ago. I had 2 days off, but I don't really have a lot else to do, so it's quite easy. I have been able to get into a nice structure of basically training most days.
Yeah.
Because where I live at the moment is a bit difficult to go and do a lot of stuff. So, and obviously with COVID and stuff like that, it's not really smart to go out to a lot of places. So.
Yeah, that's it. It's ramping up again. Are you looking forward to going home, seeing mom, dad?
Yeah, I'm excited to go. I hope to find out soon whether I do.
Yeah.
It will be nice to see everybody at home again. It's been an absolutely crazy year, and to be honest, a lot of stuff has happened back home. I'm sure to a lot of you guys as well, with families and stuff like that. People getting affected by COVID and getting injured or even dying. So, a lot's happened back home that I'd be nice to go back and see everybody and yeah, good. Be able to catch up on all of it.
Right, one more question, and it's from myself really, because it can help you give other people advice, because that's what this is all about really. What would you tell your 13-year-old self if he was sat right next to you now? So I can imagine what he'd be like, Mr. Starstruck.
Oh, but yeah.
What would you tell him? What's some advice about what he should do over the next few years or focus on?
Honestly, I would say one of the main things is don't listen to people. I mean, from especially being from New Zealand, the amount of times I was told to, from day one, literally from when I was 7 years old, people's dads telling me that, what are you, because I'd be like, I want to race an F1. And in New Zealand, most kids are like, they want to race in V8 supercars or even GTs and stuff like this, because in New Zealand and Australia, this is quite big. Yeah. Formula One is massive, but people in New Zealand just don't see it as a possibility until Brendan made it a couple of years ago and did that season. There'd been a gap of 20-something years. It's just something that people don't at home just don't even think is possible. So the amount of times I was told that it's not going to happen and you should just literally stop trying now,
yeah,
by people that I really listened to as well, by people that I really looked up to, even racing drivers. I won't put any names out, but some racing drivers I looked up to from when I was a kid even told me to give up on it. So, but I've never, even when they said, I never really listened. I wasn't really bothered by what people said. So for me, at least, it was just don't listen to people that are negative about stuff. Just don't, honestly, don't give up on it. I've been lucky enough for things to have worked out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and everything has sort of come at the right time and worked out really nicely for me so far.
I mean, it's perfectly possible. And actually, I've got probably more respect for Kiwi drivers than any other single country, just because everyone I've seen that comes out of there, bloody fast. And it looks like naturally fast, because they've come from doing motocross or something. Yeah. And it gives them such a different... And they're in the car from 13 sometimes, right? You can race really young and or get away with it in certain places. Yeah,
for me, a lot of it... To be honest, I have to thank my dad for a lot of it, because my dad is somebody that he didn't grow up racing cars, or none of my family raced cars, not competitively, anything like that. It was just something that for me when I was born, it was literally from when I was born, I was just so keen on cars and motorsport, anything that had an engine that moved, diggers, tractors, everything. I was 5 years old and sit halfway up my street just watching this bobcat dig out his driveway every single day and just sit there for hours. I was just so fascinated. But Dad is somebody that never... he started watching motor racing when I was born, but he was never involved. So when we started go-karts, he had to learn everything from scratch.
Yeah.
He was against guys, well, I guess we were against guys that had grown up in it for years. You know, their dads had raced. And it was so, I mean, to be honest, karting can be so toxic, especially at home, with karting dads and stuff like that and the competitiveness of it. But we went out, we did more testing than anybody in a go-kart. We were out there every single weekend at this really horrible track, testing all the time. And we'd go out when it was wet. I think the wet driving initially came from karting, because we'd go out when it was wet and he'd just send me out on slicks every time.
Brilliant.
And he had no idea. He'd stand on a corner and basically tell me to brake where he was standing, and he'd just pick a random spot and stand there. And I'd brake there, and then in the next lap he'd step a couple of steps more, and he'd keep doing this until I'd fire it off.
Oh, that's the limit.
And that was literally, we did this for so long, and that's where I guess started to
learn. That's really cool.
Car control and stuff like that. Yeah, it's really honestly, I honestly think a lot of it has come from this, and I never saw anybody else really doing this.
Senna did it, mate, because he was
really
diabolical in the wet. And then he just did the same thing, made sure he was good. And it just went, it's transferred straight to cars, which I've never quite understood, but it does. You just got that feel for what, it's moving, where a lot of drivers don't. They freak out when it starts to move and they hit that full ceiling.
Yeah.
But that's it. Yeah, mate, there's lots to take from this. It's obviously the science of achievement is quite obvious for racing. It's get the money in and get the results. But obviously the journey for it is not as easy as that. But you're on your way, you're doing it well, and we just got to keep ticking the days off and keep improving all the bits we need to improve. And you got to win people over. That's another thing which you do well. So now, hats off to you, buddy. It's been a ride. I've only been with it for 3 years, with you for 3 years, but it's been great. I've loved it.
Yeah, it's been so cool.
Right, that's it for now. I hope that's good for everybody. And we'll sign off, and you've got to get to the gym now. So thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Can't stop me now.